WTLC AM Indianapolis.
Indy's choice for inspiration and praise.
AM 1310, The Light.
So all the media is probably trying to figure out, why are there thousands of people down at the State House saying, we love Rich, respect the votes, people, democracy, hey, hey, oh, ho, all the testing has got to go. That's a popular one. In support of Glenda Ritz, and she's here in the studio. And she just came from Lafayette and West Lafayette, because, first of all, Superintendent Glenda Ritz, welcome.
Thank you, Amos.
You have been traveling, in all the midst of all this stuff, you have been traveling all, literally, 2 to 3 times a week to schools all over this state, and the biggest counties and the smallest counties. You were up in Tippecanoe County this morning. What were they telling you all in the principal's room, in the back room, in the teacher's room? Girl, you gotta do something. What was their mood? Because they got the test booklets. They're getting ready for ISTEP. There's all this. What were people telling you this morning?
Well, actually, I think they are prepared. Mm-hmm. The schools have the materials. They've already been working with the children on the practice items, right, and they've been using those instructionally this year, which is different. Mm-hmm. In the past, the practice test was timed, okay, and you kind of treated it like a real test. Right. But this is the first year we're giving our college and career ready assessments, and there's a lot more rigor to them, mm-hmm, and there's a lot more to the instructions. Kids have to provide evidence of learning in many instances. And so they're going to spend a lot of time doing that instructionally, putting it right within their lessons. They can bring them up whole class. They can have the kids take them, and then they can talk about them. It's going to be very open. So that was a big change this year to make sure we did that.
I don't want to ask about the politics of ISTEP at the beginning of this. I really want to give you the opportunity, first of all, to talk to the community, talk to the parents and the grandparents and the aunties and the uncles that are out there. What do they need to know to prepare their kids for all of these changes that are occurring in public education?
Well, we're going to be really measuring something different this, mm-hmm, year. Instead of measuring to small little bitty skills, we're actually going to be measuring college and career readiness. Do we have proficient readers and writers and mathematicians? Are they critical thinkers? Can they analyze more in-depth types of information that the kids need to synthesize? So they are going to be asked to do more rigorous types of questions. Mm-hmm. And really, the best thing to prepare, in my personal opinion, is a lot of reading. Mm-hmm. Kids need to be very proficient readers. They need to be able to pay attention to what they're reading, analyze what they're reading, look for evidence to support answers that they might give. That kind of thinker that we want to have, to be ready for college and career.
What about the kid that hates to read? You know, it took forever and a day to get my granddaughter to enjoy reading. I mean, when they were younger grades, she just hated to do that, but that was the hardest thing for her. So with the kid that's more into the visual, into the video, into the Xbox, into the whatever, and that's not into looking at a piece of paper and reading from it, what do you say to those parents who may just kind of slough that off and say, well, I heard the test is on computer, so why do they need to worry about how to read out of a book? They're going to be reading it off a computer screen. What do you say to those adults?
Well, reading is valuable for your entire life. Mm-hmm. You will never get away from it. And it doesn't really matter where you do the reading, whether it's on computer, electronic device, whether it's in a book. It doesn't make any difference. But I will agree, we've taken the fun out of a lot of school, mm-hmm, because we've been teaching to tests, mm-hmm, since 2001 here now, under No Child Left Behind. And that's a lot of years. And so we need to, No Child Left Behind is being reauthorized as we speak. It's starting to move through the Congress. And so we need to be sure that we're going to have a testing system in this nation that is not going to do that to kids. That's a very premise that I ran for my position on, is that we had way too many testing going on in the schools. And I'm a librarian, Amos. So when I had kids coming into my library and say, Mrs. Ritz, I don't need to check out a book today, because I just did well on my reading test. Mm-hmm. I said to myself, what are we doing to the kids? Mm-hmm. So kids need to enjoy reading. They need to know it's a vital part of what we do. They need to be doing some pretty good research with their reading. They need to find out things. Kids read a lot more than they think they do. Since we do have technology, actually, they look up a lot of things. They do more reading than they think they do.
I was doing some research over the weekend about ISTEP and trying to remember when this monster began and found something on the website, hidden somewhere, I think, on the department's website, that said it first started as a reading test in the 80s for a few grades, and then it morphed right when Evan Bayh's last year bipartisan legislature into this I-STEP Plus with one of your predecessors, Dr. Sue Ellen Reed. And I'll never forget that first, they had a meeting at IUPUI in the auditorium to try to explain I-STEP Plus. And it was like, okay, well, this is what we're going to do. And it's in third grade, sixth grade, eighth grade, and 10th grade. And it's going to be great. And we're measuring all this. And then when No Child Left Behind came in, then it got morphed. And I had forgotten that there's an entire section of state law that's titled I-STEP. And I read it literally yesterday and discovered there's a part in the law that says if your kid happens not to pass I-STEP, the school has to sit down with mom or dad and grandma and grandpa and have a conference and figure out what the kid did right, what the kid did wrong, and what's the plan for remediation. And in all of this arguing and yelling, and folk were mad and folk made up 3 days later, I've heard nothing about remediation in where we're going now in testing, are our kids college and career ready? Where does that remediation piece come now?
Well, I will tell you that that's something that I've been struggling with at legislative level, because our actual funding mechanism is now one line item. It used to be split. Testing, remediation. Okay. And we used to have a pretty good remediation budget. Mm-hmm. That has shrunk because it's all one piece now. Mm-hmm. And so the testing costs a lot more. And so there's less for the remediation. Schools are expected to do remediation whether there's money or not. We actually spend a great deal of our remediation monies for third grade because we have that third grade I-read test. Right. And so it's just spent on some basics during the summertime.
Is it that from your perspective, maybe everybody's forgotten about that section of the law? Because when I reread it, it didn't say must. It said shall. The school shall do this. And that's kind of gives you a little wiggle room. But it was very clear. Well, you got to have remediation.
Oh, yeah. You have to address the issues. And I think schools really do try to do that. Okay. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean they're necessarily funding it as it should be. Because a lot of wraparounds need to happen and a lot of small group work needs to occur. And some of that's happening to the detriment of other coursework. So we were in a mode, and we probably still are in a mode in many schools, where kids are taken out of social studies class to do remediation on language arts or mathematics or to get a double dose of reading and math. And I really think that we need to get back to a balanced curriculum and a focus that's not totally on the test. Really, I think it's an atmosphere where we're not trusting our teachers to be able to assess children. That's what we're trained to do. Mm-hmm. We're trained to assess children all the time. Every time we read with a child, every time we help them with some writing piece, every time we go to their desk and sit down and have a conversation with them about a research piece that they did, every time we grade their papers in mathematics, we are assessing continually, knowing whether kids got concepts or they didn't get concepts. I hope we're going to go to a testing system eventually if the federal government gives states the rights to not have to do a pass-fail end-of-year exam, that we're going to actually be able to do small assessments throughout the year that inform what it is we do, and kids understand and know where they actually perform and where they need to go.
From your position as the head of the Indiana State Department of Education and as the elected official over education in this state, do parents have the right to say, I don't want my kid to take I-STEP?
Well, in the state of Indiana, we do not have an opt-out provision in law.
Do not.
So we do not. And I actually encourage parents to make sure that their children are there for the assessments, and particularly this one. This is the first one on college and career readiness. Mm-hmm. Parents are going to want to know how their students did on this very first test, so that they see the types of things that their child is going to be learning.
How do we know that this test isn't biased against the career ready kid? The kid that in their heart of hearts, they really don't want to go to college except it's peer pressure, and they enjoy tinkering with the car. They enjoy art. They enjoy a career type thing, not a college type thing. How do we know this test isn't going to ding that kid in favor of the kid that wants to go to Ball State or wants to go to Harvard?
Well, I'll tell you, in Indiana, that's an easy answer for me, because we have our own college and career ready assessments, and we actually had a panel that included not only higher education, but career experts as well. So we wanted to be sure that our test was actually developed for that. So when we, when we get into the 9th and 10th grade and we're talking about going away from end of course assessments and actually doing more proficiency piece, that's what we're hearing, is we want those types of assessments to be the mathematics that the career needs to have. We're also talking, Amos, about we're looking at our options for mathematics. And so we are going to begin to offer students flexibility in pathways that they take in mathematics that will get them to where they want to go, whether it's college or career. So we are very invested in making sure that our assessments are aligned with what our career and our higher ed experts are telling us.
With Superintendent Glenda Rich, 239-1310, 239-1310. This afternoon's name is Lines Are Open. Or you can send me an email at praiseindy.com, or you can send me a text message at 37890, keyword Amos. 37890, keyword Amos. My neighbor across the street used to teach special ed, so she knew about the IEPs and all this kind of stuff. She's got a third grader, she's got a second grader, she's got a first grader. And we were talking this morning about the test. And I said, I'm going to see Superintendent Ritz later. And I said, what do you want me to ask you? She said, what is with all these tests? We got this test. We got ISTEP. We got the test in the school. We've got the test that the district wants. We got the test Superintendent Ritz wants. Why do we have all this stuff? I mean, and I'm sure she's not the only parent in Indiana thinking that way.
Well, it's because of the high stakes. So because the state of Indiana has chosen to put very high stakes on the test, and I will say that Indiana has that a lot in place because of the federal government. Mm-hmm. So what that means is that accountability, your grades for your school, are based upon that one assessment in pretty much. There's some other factors in the high school, but for pretty much it's based upon this ISTEP assessment. And that's extreme stress. And so you almost can't blame the school districts, you know, for wanting to know where their kids are performing every single minute, you know, along the way throughout a school year, so that they know who's gonna do well on the test. But I will tell you, in a pass-fail system that we are forced to do under the federal mandates, your fifth grade teachers, for example, they know who's not going to pass that test before we ever give it. And it's not a surprise to everybody when we have some students that may not pass that test. It is the small incremental pieces that some teachers do or some school districts do that really inform our learning. It's not the end of the year pass-fail test. I'm hoping that gets changed. Like I said, it's a federal issue, and we need to be all on board contacting our congressman about having an assessment system that is good for kids.
When you talk to your counterparts in the 50 states, whether they are elected by the people or whether they are appointed by the governor of the state or the state board, or the states have multiple situations, do your counterparts feel the same way?
Oh, you betcha.
Regardless of party?
Oh, yeah. We feel there's way too much testing, and we're hoping to have some flexibility in what that looks like coming back. We spend an enormous amount of money on testing vendors. And when you're having to develop tests that are pass-fail tests of this magnitude, that everybody has to take the same question at the same time, it doesn't leave you open for other types of assessments that we can give that are more what I call informal, formative assessments. So that's the type of assessment that we need to give, those short interval assessments, and that's it. We don't need an end-of-the-year test to tell us what we already know.
Should these kind of tests be like the college test where there is no pass-fail grade on the ACT or the SAT? There's a score, and then the college or the university looks at that score as part of the whole part of the student.
Well, I hope that's where we're going. We're having some pretty good conversations at a Core 40 subcommittee under the Career Council, and we're hoping that the conversation is going to be about the the transcript. Right. And on the transcript, you know, what does that tell about the whole person? Mm-hmm. Because the test is really just one part, and we shouldn't be judging just on that. And we hear from the higher ed that they don't look just at that, that they do want to see what kind of courses they take, and they want to see the attendance of the students, and they want to have that kind of information. So the higher ed has been looking at transcripts for a long time, but career has not. And we're hoping to really have career take close, you know, get in the habit of saying, hey, we want to see your transcript so we can see the whole person, what it is that you've done.
Let me start today with Daryl. Hi, Daryl. Oh, we answered Daryl's question. Let me go to Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Amos, how you doing?
I'm fine.
You know what, Amos, I tell you what, you know, once again, Indiana's going to be behind the ball again as far as education and tests. What this governor has done to, to Ms. Ritz is, I thought it just a travesty. And, you know, I don't know. I'm just, I'm baffled. I mean, it's, what is Mike Pence? What does he want?
Well, I think, you know, as I said to somebody not too long ago who asked me, you know, whose job is it for education? And I said, it's a shared responsibility. You know, the legislature sets the tone and sets some of the laws, and the governor appoints the State Board of Education, which deals with some policy. And then I implement quite a few things. But I'm a key active person with all of the entities, because I was elected to represent the people who did elect me on the conversation about education policy. So now this testing issue is really a prime example. What should have happened, in my personal opinion, is the governor could have just given me a phone call, and I would have said, hey, I'm already working on reducing the test. And I would have told him also in the same breath that I can't reduce the test portion that we need to without legislative action.
Well, what did I say about you, Mrs. Rich? You're a law-abiding citizen compared to your predecessor. And you play by the rules, and I support you 100%. And I tell you what, the governor, what he's doing is really petty as far as I'm concerned.
All right, Jeff, I appreciate it. So on this testing thing, let me make sure I understand this. There are, in order to shorten this, the legislature has to very quickly speed a law through the process, which they've been known to get a law passed in not a day. It takes about 3 days, 3 to 4 days. They've got to do some things. Just like the governor said, he could not unilaterally shorten the test. You can't unilaterally shorten it.
That's correct. So the governor and I just talked actually today, and we think perhaps they might do some type of resolution that may go through to let me know the intent so that we could go ahead and let the field know what it is that we might be doing. So we've requested two things. We've requested to not release part one, which is the writing samples and everything the kids do, to not release this year's questions to the public next year. We're required to do that by law.
Which allows the parents to see how well did you do?
Correct. But it also, this being the first year we had to give the test, we had to double the test.
Right.
Okay? So in order to not double the test
in order to test questions for the next year.
Okay. Correct. Mm-hmm. So in order to not release those questions, we're going to split the questions up amongst the students and gather our same information. Mm-hmm. And I need permission from the General Assembly to do something like that. If we want to make it an option, perhaps if they give or not give social studies tests, or if we want to say, hey, for social studies, we don't want anybody to give part one. Mm-hmm. That'll reduce 30 more minutes of the test time for grades 5 and 7. But I can't do that without the General Assembly's action. I reduced everything that I could at the state level. So, and I explained to you already about the practice test. And we also gave eighth graders a chance to not take the end-of-course assessment because it wasn't going to be count for accountability or graduation. So there's another test that they don't need to take this year. So we did everything we could. And so now it's really up to the General Assembly because I developed the test within the confines of the federal law and the state law.
So this needs to be something where the speaker writes a bill very quickly, Senator Long, who thinks you're a librarian, which is partly what you were. He does that very quickly, and then that's the kind of thing that this is the sense of the House, this is the sense of the Senate, and everybody kind of agrees not to come back and double-cross everybody. And everybody agrees, this is the sense of it, we want to shorten this, and we agree to this, and then they put the actual law a little bit later in the session.
Yeah, I think they're going to actually do both just as quickly as they can, but it's my understanding that, you know, we may not be able to get the actual bill passed this week, right. And we have our test window is February 25th.
So schools could start Monday.
They could.
Theoretically.
They could.
Getting a sense that everybody wants to maybe hold back 3 or 4 days just to make sure that they're all clear and copacetic?
It'll be up to them because we actually extended the windows.
Okay.
So they got an extra 5 days onto the window to make sure that they had plenty of time for students to take their assessment. And we also, I think this is a missed point quite a bit. This is a much more rigorous assessment. So the times per session for kids to actually work on, especially in part one, is much more rigorous. The kids are going to have to do a lot more reading. They're going to have to find evidence within their reading passages to support answers they might give. Their math problems are going to be more in depth. And so we wanted to be sure kids had plenty of time to do the work. So the length of the test in part deals with kids having ample time to get their questions answered. I had students, that were talking the other day and said, please don't reduce the time on the test because they want to have plenty of time to take each of the sessions.
So it's the adults that were freaking out because was some of it just people thinking that kids were going to sit there for 12 hours and do a test?
I don't know. I don't know what some people might think, but it's divided into small sessions. And so, you know, with 15 days to give the assessment, and it doesn't nearly take that long, you could give just one session in the morning at the start of the day and be done for the day. And then you could give one the next day and one the next day. So you can spread them out. They at the local level, they're in charge of coming up with the best testing environment.
239-1310. 239-1310. Let me go to the phones. People are sending me questions on my Twitter at AmosWTLCND. 239-1310 to the phones and Jane. Hi, Jane.
Hi. I just had a question for your guest. It's probably parent and probably professional. I wanted to speculate in the mix of the testing. What is used now since the advent of Leave No Child Behind to identify children with processing problems? They're going to test low, and tutoring generally, just additional tutoring, don't help these students. So what's built in to identify these students and also to get them the type of assistance they need?
So with special education, so I'll let you know right off the start that I am licensed in special education. So it's a population of students that I care deeply about and making sure that we have processes in place. So the identification process has not changed for the identification of a student who has special needs. But if a student does have special needs, then their accommodations can be written into their IEP so that they could have accommodations on the actual test.
Okay, that's not quite the question I was asking.
Okay, what's the question?
The question is, because test scores are used, rather than looking at different processing areas for individual students, how do you identify, how do you fish out the processing difficulties, not just the test scores?
Well, I will tell you that this test does not do that. Those types of processing pieces would be done individually with students who have special needs, with special assessments to help us identify those processing items so that we can help with the instruction of the students. But this test, ISTEP, will not do that for us. In fact, I'll go one step further because the federal government, we used to give here, and in fact, this last year was our last year to give it, something called IMAST for some students who were more severely handicapped. And so with that assessment, we were able to give that alternative assessment. We are no longer allowed to do that by U.S. Department of Education. And so those students will take the regular ISTEP this year with accommodations that they have in their IEPs. And, you know, I'm quite frankly, I'm worried that we're going to have students that are going to be, you know, not able to really go through that full assessment, and we're going to see some extreme frustration. That is also something that we need to be speaking very loudly about at the federal level with our U.S. congressmen, because we got to get some things changed in testing for some of our populations of students at the federal level.
I appreciate it, Jane. Let me go to Daryl at 239-1310. Hi, there.
Hi, good afternoon. I got cut off earlier, but what I wanted to say is to Superintendent Ritz, I think you're doing a wonderful job. I'm unfortunate that they're trying to take that position from you, and I believe it's because you being the first elected female in this position, they want to take the powers from you. Now, I'm like this. If that had been Godfather Tony Bennett, they wouldn't be doing you like this. They would not be doing you like this. Matter of fact, probably the legislation would probably try to find more monies for him, anything else. So I applaud what you're doing as superintendent. So it doesn't matter if you're a librarian or a doctor, indoctored and whatever. I think you're just doing a wonderful job, Mr. Ritz.
Now, Daryl, I got to correct your history here on President's Day. Superintendent Ritz is not the first elected female superintendent of public instruction. She may be the first elected Democratic superintendent of public instruction, but Dr. Sue Ellen Reed was a Republican who served four terms, if my memory serves me right, with both.
That's right, and I forgot about Dr. Sue Ellen Reed. I did forget about her. But, yeah, the first Democrat, that's what I should have said. But, yeah, still I applaud you. And don't be discouraged by what the legislature is doing. Just do what you were elected to do as a politician. And I know this is not a political position to you because you're caring about education. But I'll just say just do the best that you're doing and applaud you for it. That was all.
Thank you for your comment, sir.
I appreciate it. Now, Sarah Max asked a question on Twitter. Sarah Max says, ask Ritz, when will scores be released to students? Hearing not until late September.
Well, actually, that's about right. So let me explain why. So it's the first time we're giving a brand new test. And when that happens, we have to actually analyze all of the information after the students take the test, and we have to establish brand new baseline. And that means we're making cutoff scores. And this year, we're hoping with our new accountability system, we're not just going to make three cutoffs. So the three cutoffs for ISTEP have been pass plus and do not pass. And so we're going to split it up into more categories so we can see more incremental growth of students.
Like kind of did okay, did better than okay, did great, and gazam, kind of like that.
Yeah, that's a pretty easy way to put it.
Now, is also the... Do I have to sit here, since I sit on the education roundtable to disclose to the audience, does that mean that decision comes before me, before it gets to the State Board of Education?
You betcha.
Oh, Lord.
So get ready, Amos.
I have to take a public vote on the cut scores.
Yes.
The lobbying was... So, but your proposal may be a range, as opposed to this is it, or this is pass plus.
Yeah, we're going to have incremental within the pass, do not pass, pass, and pass plus. We're going to have some other incremental categories in there so that we can see incremental growth. So yes, cut scores are going to be a little different this year, and we're going to be building that up through the range as you just said.
Because I think some people think that the slowness of that, they don't realize that there's two formal boards by state law that have to evaluate the evidence and take a public vote.
Yes, that's true.
Okay. It's not just you.
No.
239. Some people think that. 239-1310. 239-1310. Back to the phones. And Mia. Hi there.
Yes. Hi, Amos. How are you?
I'm fine.
Hi, Miss Glenda. I'm sorry. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
That's good. I have a question. Also a comment. I'm trying to figure out what you was talking about with the last lady about the special needs and taking IMASH. I didn't know about that because my son, he's special needs, and I didn't know that they wasn't taking it this year because his special education coordinator nor his teacher advised me about that.
Well, and I'm not sure the range of your special needs with your child. So I don't know if they have. I don't know which test. We do have one test called the NICSIC. They used to take ISTAR, and now they're going to take the NCSIC. So we have that one available for the more severe students. And then the other students will be taking the regular ISTEP with accommodations. So you should be informed, because your IEP should talk about the accommodations for your child.
Does your IEP have special rules when your child takes a test?
Yes, it states that he's due to get breaks like every 15 to 20 minutes, but they don't do that now because they don't even have nobody.
Before the special ed teacher gets in, that's whatever is written in your IEP is the equivalent of the Psalms in Scripture, is the equivalent of the gospel according to Paul. It is the Bible. That goes. If they don't follow that, that school is violating the law. It doesn't matter whether they don't have the staff. That is a federal violation in the state of Indiana, Department of Education, as a special education unit that would help you enforce that. So if they're making an excuse, they're barking up the wrong tree.
Okay.
Okay. Is this a big school system or a small school system?
Amos, this is Mia. You know what school it is, Indiana Life Science Academy. I'm still having problems with them.
Well, they have to make accommodations for your child, and the accommodations that are actually written in the IEP. So I would get
Mia,
with them
Mia,
prior to testing.
All right, Mia, do this for me. Mia, I'm going to put you on hold, and Drew is going to take your name and a phone number where you can be reached during the day, and the Department of Education will follow up with you.
Okay.
Okay, because they got and that's something that people that are listening that have an IEP need to understand. If they've got accommodations written and the accommodations are specific if that kid has to take the I-step, they got to follow that policy.
They do.
So if it means you break every 5 minutes, if that's written in the IEP, bam, that's what you got to do.
That's true.
And if they don't do that, they can call special ed down at the department.
Yep, right, and I would urge them to do so.
239-1310, 239-1310. While Drew gets that information from Mia, can we go, Drew, to... Yep. All right, I think Mia's trying to... Let me go to Al. If I can go to Al at 239-1310. Hi, Al.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm fine. What's up?
I understand the importance of I-STEP, but I strongly believe they need to put more emphasis on I-READ. Because if a child doesn't pass I-READ, then he or she is left behind. They failed their grade.
I don't know whether is that one of the other myths, Superintendent Ritz, that if you fail I-READ, you're held back a grade? Because I don't think that's what the law actually says.
No, it's not. That isn't exactly what it says, and it's in rule. And so, really, it's a last resort. So the I-READ test was developed, and third graders take it, and the school corporation then actually makes the final determination as to whether a child is actually retained or not as a result of not passing that assessment. They have two opportunities to pass it. So they'll take it here in March, and then they also they'll get remediation, and then they can take it again in the summer. And so we have a pretty high passage rate, actually, for the I-READ 3. So a great many of our students are actually reading on grade level, and that's good to know. I will tell you that our I-STEP going forward, we'll be able to capture reading information separately. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that we could reduce some tests by gathering that information on a test we're already getting, gathering good reading information and eliminating, perhaps the I-READ 3 in the future, because we don't need two assessments giving us the same type of information.
239-1310. 239-1310 is after news. Name is We'll Take a Break. Superintendent Glenda Ritz is here. When we come back, somebody's asking me a question on praiseindy.com about the test maker, CTB McGraw-Hill, and I'll ask her when we come back from the break, do they realize if their computers don't work this year that Superintendent Ritz and Governor Pence will both get on a plane and go down to wherever their headquarters are and act a fool. They'll reincarnate Bobby Knight from the 70s and throw... Well, we know they're going to do that because the whole state will want to go there if CTB McGraw-Hill messes up. Anyway, all that and more for Superintendent Ritz, 239-1310. 239-1310. Send me an email at praiseindy.com or a text message to 37890 keyword Avis. After News with Amos for a Monday.
This is King Ro Conley, and you're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310. The Light.
With Superintendent of Public Instruction Glenda Ritz. There was another stress test, as I understand it, last week, testing the computers of McGraw-Hill, and there were problems. I saw news reports from all over the state of problems. Does McGraw-Hill really understand there's no more probation with them? They messed this up. The entire state will be angry, and Bobby Knight will have to come back and give them some discipline. Do they really understand that?
Well, let me first of all talk about that stress test, because the stress test is testing the hardware and capacity of what we have going on. So the stress test actually was successful. Mm-hmm. So what people experienced in their schools, we were testing to double the load that we would ever need. Right. Okay. And so they're trying to calibrate what it is that they actually do need to have. We're going into the cloud, okay, for the storage now. So they were testing their servers, and when they actually pressed some buttons and did some things to bring their load where they needed it, and so the field actually experienced a freezing, which wasn't any concern to anyone, really, at CTB or to the department. At the field end, they thought things weren't working.
Okay.
But in actuality, we were testing double the load and trying to figure out what it is that they actually needed to have in order to have a successful testing in the spring.
So it's making sure that CTB McGraw-Hill server and the cloud, and for listeners that don't know, the cloud is not just something up in the sky. The cloud is a better way to store internet data and servers, that they understand this is like somebody that's advertising something on the Super Bowl, and you got to make sure that when 120 million people watch and want to go online, that you can handle that demand.
Perfect analogy. In fact, that's a great way to explain that. So it's ready to go. It was successful, and I know that people in the field thought that it wasn't, because they did experience that freeze, but that freeze was actually on CTB's end, actually trying to figure out and make sure that they had the testing levels where they needed them. So it was successful. We don't have to do another one, and hopefully our assessments online will go smoothly.
Let me go to Judy at 239-1310. Hi there.
How you doing?
Fine.
Good. You said that you was a special ed teacher?
Yes, I'm licensed in special ed, general ed, and library science.
Okay. Because from the first grade here in Indianapolis till we moved to Dayton, Ohio, then in the fifth grade, I wasn't getting the when I raised my hand to the teachers to ask questions, I was being ignored. So because of their attitude and their conduct and their behavior towards me, it didn't help me, to learn.
How many years ago was that?
Okay. So then when she decided, okay, I'm special ed, that embarrassed me, because everybody was making fun of, friends or whatever was making fun of that. But I did try to make an effort to learn by raising my hand, things I didn't know,
Is it
it's not about money, because talk is cheap, but it's not about the money. My mom has a friend, she's a tutor.
Right.
And I had friends in Texas. My husband, he was in the Army, so I had a friend, she was a tutor. And I believe in tutoring for the kids more now, because all the pressure about money and money and money and money, right.
Well, ma'am, I would agree with you that tutoring and making sure that you're meeting the needs of the child is of utmost importance. And so how that happens within the school district is done in a lot of different ways. But I certainly hope that we are having engaging teachers, that they are paying attention to student needs, whether they have a special education label or not. We are responsible for meeting student needs.
Is it, and I appreciate the call, Judy, going back to resources. This is a brand new test. So that means that tutors aren't yet drilled, or are they, in how to tutor for this I-STEP based on the career and college-ready standards?
So, yes, we have our new standards, and we've been working with kids, and they've been developing curriculum. I will say that even under the Common Core, we were doing college and career-ready types of learning and had been doing that for 3 years. So Indiana should be more prepared for this this first assessment that we're going to give. Although we are expecting to see perhaps a drop in scores, other states have seen drops in performance. It doesn't necessarily mean our students are performing worse. It means we're measuring something different. But there will be, there is going to be an expected drop.
Let me go back to the phones in Bradford. Hi there.
Hey, how are you doing?
Fine.
I would like to ask Superintendent Ritz, how is it that, or will it be considered with the new growth model that we have a new, with the new test on the board, principals will be considered for, to be let go based on the new test when we anticipate that the scores are going to be low?
So now you're talking about accountability and tying the test scores to teacher evaluation.
Well, and principal's evaluation.
You betcha, exactly. All educator evaluation. And I am going to be a proponent of, and I will be speaking fairly loudly regarding those two topics. The federal government has given all states the option to be flexible and not assign grades this year and not tie it to teacher evaluation. And the reason that that is because we're all giving a brand new assessment. And any time you do the assessment for the first time, it is expected that there'll be a drop of scores. And so removing the high stakes consequences for that test is really recommended. And so I will be talking with members of the legislature. They are the only body that could relieve us of accountability, grades being assigned, and the teacher evaluation being tied to those state scores. So with that, that does not mean we won't have accountability. In fact, quite the opposite. We will be producing all the scores, providing all the interventions to schools, especially those low-performing schools. We'll be providing all the information and the growth information and all of the data to the schools to go about doing their school improvement plan as they have always done. So I'm not talking about less accountability. I'm talking about not assigning the grades. I will be asking for a freeze in accountability grades being assigned and a freeze to the teacher evaluation. I don't know how that will be received, but I would be remiss and irresponsible if I did not say that's what we should do in the state of Indiana.
I appreciate it, Bradford. So that could mean if the scores are released in September, if the results in Indiana are similar to other states, maybe not as drastic as New York State, that's the worst example, and scores go down and Hoosiers have an outcry, it is conceivable that at Organization Day in November of 2015, the legislature could do something.
Yeah, they could have an opportunity to do something before the legislature ends, literally. But they could wait until we actually have all the information and then make decisions upon that. So you are correct. There's some leeway there about looking at the information.
And the federal government has told states in writing, just because Arne Duncan says it to you orally doesn't necessarily mean it. He said it in writing that you have the flexibility to produce the scores but not count it in accountability. For like a 1 year, it's a new test, and not to call it a test, so kids understand this is not play, and kind of slack off, because I think there was some comment last week, well, if the kids know it's not a real test, they'll back off, which doesn't sound like any kids I know. Let me go to Don right quick, then we'll take a break. Hi, Don. Don?
Hey, how you doing, Amos?
Fine.
Hey, Superintendent Ritz, I really enjoyed your dialogue with Mr. Brown today. You've been very, very clear and accurate on everything that you said. You didn't stumble one time. Everything has made sense. You even encouraged our community to go out and, write our congressmen in order to change some of these laws that might help you and support you. So you continue to do the great work that you're doing. You have my support. You sound so much like my wife. You're very, very clear and concise, and I really appreciate that. You have a beautiful day, Ms. Ritz, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir.
I appreciate that. 239-1310. Back to the phones. And Karen. Hi, Karen.
And hi, Anna Sanis Ritz.
Hi.
I have done some substitute teaching or acted as a teacher's aide in the past, and I'm a big supporter of teachers because it wasn't until I did that that I have a true appreciation of what they do, and my sister is also a teacher. And I've seen kids removed from the classroom, of course, for behavior issues, or they're either in the class or they're simply not paying attention or doing the work asked by the teacher. So, of course, all these kids are going to take I-STEP. So my question is, when you get the hardcore numbers and it says this school is a B or a D, do you factor in that, you know, that small percentage in some of the classrooms around the state that there are kids that are removed from the classroom or, you know, so inevitably, you know, they're going to do, they may do poorly because they're not getting, you know, the teaching firsthand.
No, those home situations perhaps, or the challenges they bring to the classroom or their own work ethics is not factored into the assessment. The assessment is just based on their performance on the actual test. And you're correct. It does not take into account the whole child, which is why the test itself should not be the end all. We're working with children here. We're working with people. And so we always have to take account all of a student's talents. I attended, you know, this was never more poignant to me when I attended a graduation ceremony of a high school that received an F. And the valedictorian of that class, her entire speech was on, "You don't know us, we're not F."
Mm-hmm.
And she talked about the talents of the kids and she called them by names and it was so moving. And I went, what have we done to the kids? It's the kids that are internalizing these grades. I am not a proponent of assigning grades to school. I am because it affects the students. The students, when they leave our high schools, if you think that colleges are not looking at the grades of those schools that they're leaving from, they are.
Oh, I agree.
And the kids are not getting a fair, equitable opportunity when they leave our lower performing schools. They could be valedictorians. They could have great GPA averages. They could be great kids with super talents, but they're not going to have an A on their school. They're going to have an F.
Yeah, and the college is going to say your grade was overinflated because the school was rated an F.
Yeah, I really do not believe in the ABCDF grading system, which is why we are at least making a fair and equitable accountability system. So starting next year, we'll have a different way of calculating growth and measuring that, and hopefully it'll be fair to the individual student. I am dedicated to having a fair accountability system if they're gonna continue to force the ABCDF on our schools.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Did anybody get the transcript of that student speech? That sounded like a heck of a speech.
We actually do have that. I asked for it in writing. I think I can look that up.
And where was the school?
George Washington.
Here.
It is.
NIPS.
It is.
Has had the trouble this school year. Maybe they should hire that. No, that's a whole other conversation. Let me go to Brian at 239-1310. Hi, Brian.
Hello, Superintendent Ritz. I have a question for you that's probably a little more broad than most. Our students are entitled to a free and appropriate public education. Has that ever been defined? What is a free and appropriate public education?
Well, I think that's been debated a lot. I will tell you that in the state of Indiana, I think it says in the law, Amos, you may want to look it up, I think it talks about tuition. It does not, you know, we don't have free textbooks even in the state of Indiana. And so in Indiana, there are fees and charges that are that parents need to pay, and I wouldn't call it free.
Right. I guess I'm a little ambiguous. I'm concerned about our end goal. What is the goal of education? We're testing, we're standardizing things. We want to see children come out at a certain level, but what is our purpose for education of our youth? Is it to make a well-rounded citizen? Is it to make people who are ready to go to work for you know, the big companies? Or, you know, what are we trying to do with our kids?
Well, I will tell you that the purpose that I embody is that we do want our kids to be college and career ready. No matter what they want to do after high school, they should be ready to go do it. And not only that, if they want to change what it is that they're doing, that they've got the skills that they need to be able to do that. So I'm going to go back to reading. I just can't stress that enough. When kids are active readers and writers and problem solvers, they are going to be capable of going to do what they want to do, and they can change careers multiple times. They have to feel confident about themselves. They have to know that they have the capability to be learners. We're actually teaching kids to be learners, lifelong learners.
All right, appreciate the question. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. We'll be back with our many moments with Superintendent Ritz, and then she'll try to race down snow-covered streets. So if there's somebody listening on their phone to praiseindy.com and they're down at the rally, we're trying to get her down there, you know, before the end of the rally, so you just walk in, you know, and say hi. Because I guess there's so many people there, she's got to somehow get through the people to get to the office. Anyway, it's Afternoons with Amos after these. All right, welcome back. 239. We got something on another question on Twitter, and you kind of mentioned this earlier. And this was about Indiana law says you can't opt out of ISTEP. What keeps schools from moving kids, either throwing them out of school, you know, during ISTEP week, or taking action so their worst performing kids don't take the test? Do you ask schools, well, wait a minute, you got 33rd graders and 23 took the test. What happened to the other six or seven?
Well, what prevents that is the 95% participation rate. Mm-hmm. So the federal government requires that we have 95% participation rate.
95% of the kids.
You're correct. And so when the schools do not, in the state of Indiana, we have to put that in our accountability system. Mm-hmm. So when schools do not have 95% participation rate, they lose a point, maybe 2 points. They go down a whole letter grade or two. So no school wants to chance the participation rate. That is an important piece of what happens with accountability.
Let me go to Dennis at 239-1310. Hi there. Dennis?
Hi.
Yes, you're on the air.
I have an off-topic question for Glenda Ritz. If you're given the opportunity to run for governor, would you do it?
Well, I will tell you right now, I'm happy in my position as superintendent. In fact, I love my job every single day. So I haven't really thought about the governorship, but I like what I do for the superintendent as the superintendent of public instruction. And I will tell you, I have a really large photograph that I blew up in my office of the kids at Crooked Creek when I was sworn in front of them. About 600 kids all put their hands in the shape of a heart and sent me away with love, and I blew it up. And I put inspire the love of learning, and every day I walk in, I know why I'm there. I'm there for kids. But I'm happy in my current position, and I haven't really given the governorship much thought.
John Gregg will be happy to hear that. 239-1310, 239-1310. Superintendent, what is the position of your department? There's a bill moving through the legislature that would exempt private schools that are accepting kids under the voucher, the Choice Scholarship, from taking ISTEP. You see, to me, the rule has been you want state accreditation, particularly with the vouchers, you have to take you have to be in ISTEP. Now there's a bill moving through the legislature that would exempt private schools.
So my philosophy is that anybody that takes public dollars should be under the same accountability system, period. I would like to see the testing that we do with kids be a different type of testing. I want to be growth model instead of this pass-fail that we're doing right now. It does need to be reasonable. So I hear the concern about testing, okay? But it needs to be the same for everybody. If you're going to take public dollars, you should have the same amount of accountability.
On the high stakes, we had the scandal with involving Flanner House or individuals at the Flanner House Charter School. Are you concerned with the really high stakes this year that somebody might be tempted to do something really stupid?
Well, that's what high stakes does. You know, I think high stakes tempts people, especially when the grades mean so much. And in a competition kind of world where you're wanting to advertise your school, you want to advertise that A. Mm-hmm. And I know that we've had some issues already that have been brought to light about the advertising of schools. And just because you received an A a few years ago and you don't have an A now, is it still appropriate to have it on your brochure? So there's a lot of different things going on, and I don't approve of all of that. I don't approve of the competition we've got going on. I don't approve of the high stakes that we have tied to our tasks. Our test. We need to just kind of slow down here, evaluate things, and it starts, I'll say it again, it starts at the federal level.
Back to the phones and Vicki right quick. Hi, Vicki, got about a minute.
Hi, Amos. I got a question. If your kids have IEP, who checks up on the schools to make sure that they have qualified teachers in the schools, not just regular teachers, just qualified teachers to teach the children who have the IEPs? Because I know for a fact that the schools have IEPs, they're getting the dollars, I guess, that comes with it. but there's no one in the classroom assisting the children. So who follows up to make sure the schools are doing what they're supposed to do and living up to the standards?
So whenever...
Yeah,
that's a great question. So, first of all, when those types of things are brought to the department's attention, we do immediate checkup. And I will tell you that we have 13 outreach coordinators now around the state of Indiana who work and serve within the regions in which they actually work. And special education and the quality of special education is very important to the state of Indiana. And so whenever we hear of those types of things, and I would urge you to contact the Department of Education because we do follow up.
Well, maybe what needs to happen, it has been a long time. It has been several years since we had the privilege of having the experts in the Department of Special Education with the Department of Education on the program that could walk everybody through the IEP and the special ed rules and pick up and if there's any sin out there, trust me, we'll hear it. So maybe we'll just, you know, work on that and have the special education folks, you know, come on here and deal with that. Let me go to Rose right quick at 239-1310. Hi, Rose.
Hi, Miss. I know you got time is short, but I got a quick question about these tests.
Yeah.
First, I would like to ask her, has she taken that test to really to see if it qualifies for these children in the schools? Has she or anyone else in the school system, the political system that's fighting and the people who write it, take those tests and present their grades truthfully to see if the tests are for the children or is just something to confuse them?
Great question.
Yeah, that is a great question. So there, a couple of things are happening with this year's test. So this year's test, we're piloting everything, literally. These are all brand new questions. And so after the students take the test, that we have what we call an overage of questions. And we do that on purpose because questions that students, all, you know, like a large number of students struggle with,
yeah,
they will not count. Okay. So after,
so if there's a question that 85% of Hoosier kids get wrong, you're going to throw that question out.
You betcha. So, and that's important to know because we want to make sure that we have a good pool of questions in which to make sure that the kids are getting the fair opportunities to be able to answer the questions. Now, I think I heard a hint of, have other people taken this test to know if we should be, you know, adults? Mm-hmm. Have we taken this test to know? And I will tell you, I personally have not, but the test questions are developed based upon our grade level standards. So they can't deviate from the grade level standards that are already out there that teachers are teaching to the curriculum. So they have to be grade level appropriate.
All right, appreciate the question. Let me go to Eric. Eric, you got 1 minute.
Yes, so my question is, why isn't the test more, more diverse? And if we're trying to get our kids ready for college and careers, there has to be some type of diversity, that our kids need to be exposed to.
What do you mean? Quickly. Wait, hold it. Quickly. What do you mean by diversity?
As in, like, the way the questions are formatted, the way the way some of the questions are asked, I mean, and what do they talk about? Like, so for reading comprehension, they may talk about, you know, they don't really talk about African Americans or Latinos or any type of person and then answer questions about, you know, that type of person when you're reading, you know, when you're trying to answer the question.
So
all right, let me let her respond.
So I will tell you that the questions themselves go through a very rigorous, biased process to be sure that we do not have biased questions on the test. And we are pretty concerned about that. We want to be sure that the questions don't represent bias. And so we have, you know, the experts that we hire and going through those. In fact, Indiana educators, we spend a great deal of time picking out the reading passages we want in the state of Indiana. So we are, and then we go through a rigorous bias piece to make sure that they aren't. So we spend a great deal of time on that issue and hope that we've gotten it right. And as we go, as I told you, we always have, especially this year, an overage of questions as well because we want to give kids every opportunity to make sure that they can do well.
And one final question, Superintendent. There's people out there with the events that happened last week that think that whenever you and the governor get together, whether it is in person or whether it's on the phone, y'all ain't getting along. What's the skinny? What's the real deal?
Well, that wouldn't be true. Actually, we do have some conversation and we do meet. In regards to actually implementation, I think it's really the roles. Ever since he formed the, you know, his own education agency. There has been a battle, and there's been a battle between who does what. Mm-hmm. You know, does the State Board of Education have the authority here, or does the department and the superintendent have the authority? And so those lines are very unclear now. Mm-hmm. They didn't used to be, because the Department of Ed used to support the State Board. But now they're unclear, and they're anytime you see battles happening, it's really about the roles. Who's doing what?
It's an institutional battle, not a personal battle. Is that
correct? Correct. Yes, it is.
I think people saw the governor last week angry. Oh, he's angry at Rich. He probably cussed her out somewhere. But then you mentioned at the beginning of the show, maybe people didn't hear it, that you talked to the governor this morning.
Yes, I did, and we had conversation about the test. What's happening is that there's a control issue, mm-hmm. you know, where you've got one entity who wants to oversee the other. And, you know,
both independently elected state officials.
You betcha. And I'm going to fiercely protect what the Department of Education and superintendent's roles are. I hope to have a study committee this summer to actually clear up those roles.
Superintendent of Public Instruction, Glenda Ritz. Oh, if you all are downtown because y'all are dealing with I Stand With Ritz. The driver just walked in. So they heading downtown. So all of y'all taking the pictures. They tell me there's as many people, there's thousands of people, literally, at the State House. So she's on her way. Superintendent Glenda Ritz, thanks very much for being with us. That's it for today.